Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Ocean Lovers podcast. Kirsty here, your host, and I have a special guest here. His name is Eric Wall, and he is going to be talking all about his scuba diving adventures. I've been following him on social media for a while now. He's also a volunteer at the aquarium. So we're just going to kind of get right into it and welcome Eric to the podcast. And yeah, let's just get right into it. Welcome to the Ocean Lovers podcast.
Hey, happy to be here, Kirsty. This is my first ever podcast appearance, so yeah, we'll see how it goes. No, I'm
Awesome.
sure it'll be great.
Yeah,
But
I'm so
yeah,
excited.
I was honestly like really surprised when you reached out to me because I'm like, oh yeah, Kirsty and I, we followed each other for a long time. Always cool to see a lot of the support, especially with like Happy Whale stuff and everything.
Yes.
But yeah, this is a very fun opportunity. I don't get to talk about, I guess, diving itself or just like my stuff that much, so
Yeah, to like other than like you're probably your own little group, huh?
I'm like kind of like my
Yeah.
smaller circles, I guess.
Yeah.
But
Cool.
let's see, I guess, yeah, talking about like volunteering and all that good
Yeah. Oh,
jazz.
before we get started, let's
Oh
do
yeah,
our rapid fire questions. I almost
sure.
forget. I get so wrapped up in the introduction to where I almost forget about them. Okay, so this is just kind of an icebreaker for people that are have been here on the podcast for a while. They know about this. So it's just a couple questions, and we always tell our guests to try to answer them as like kind of what comes first to mind. But usually our rapid fire questions aren't very rapid. They sometimes they take a while, and it's still okay. Okay, so first question, what is a fun fact about yourself?
Fun fact about myself. Let's see. You know what? This is. Oh, that'd be pretty good. Okay, yeah, sure. Why not? Why not? I don't care if my identity gets stolen here, but I
Oh
was
God.
born on September 29th, 1999 at 9:09 p.m. So that's
Oh
9:29, 9:09, 9:09 p.m.
wow. Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah,
That's
it's not ocean
interesting.
related at
Yeah,
all, but
that's okay.
I was just like, it's a fun little bit of trivia that I don't get to tell
Is.
that many people.
Yeah,
Yeah, but
that's really
it's on my birth
cool.
certificate. I didn't believe my mom for years until
Oh
she
my.
showed it to me.
That's so cool. Yeah, that's pretty, that's a good one. That's a good one. What is your favorite place that you've traveled to or that you want to travel to? Or you can answer both.
Favorite place that I've traveled to, probably the Philippines,
Okay.
actually. Yeah, I did a dive trip
Oh
there
wow.
earlier this year in May, and it was magical, honestly.
Oh wow. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
How long
Got
were
a
you
lot
there
of
for?
amazing photos. We were there for about a week, so it wasn't super
Oh,
long, but
okay.
we kind of made up for it because we were diving like every single day. I think I got 3+ dives a day. So a
Wow.
lot of time in the water, but luckily it's like 82 to 85 degrees in there, so
Oh, wow.
it's
Oh,
very
okay.
easy to get in and
Yeah.
out
Oh, yeah.
versus here in Monterey.
Yeah. Yeah, cool. I definitely want to hear more about that as we get more into the episode. That'd be cool.
Absolutely.
What marine animal best describes your personality and why?
All right, I'm going to be
Everybody
very
loves this one.
biased here. Yeah, I mean, we're on an Ocean Lovers podcast
Right?
after all. I have always been a lifelong octopus fan. Like, I've been wearing
Awesome.
an octopus shirt right now. I've got an octopus little
Oh
mug.
my gosh, awesome.
I don't want to show my octopus plush collection because it would look too sad, maybe, or enthusiastic. I don't
Right?
know.
No, that's awesome.
But but yeah, I've always loved octopuses, especially like giant Pacific octopuses,
Okay.
and just even to get into more of that. But that's to say, not just because they're cool animals, but at least I would like to try to identify a little bit with their creativity, curiosity,
Yeah.
and their ability to stretch themselves beyond what seems to be their capacity sometimes.
Yeah. That's awesome. They're very interesting creatures, especially like their whole life cycle in general. Like, I know
Oh,
a lot of
yeah.
people find it. I mean, not every life cycle is the same, right? For every single like species. Like, not
Not
like
every
for the.
single species.
Okay. Well, for like the females, I know like after they lay their eggs, they basically protect them until they die. But I know not every single one is like that, right? From what
Yeah,
I
not
understand.
all species. Ah, man, on the spot. I can't. There are certain species that have demonstrated like kind of different behaviors, but for the most part, it's kind of a blanket across the board. There can be more
Okay.
exceptions rather than
Oh,
it being overrepresented, I would say.
okay. Okay. Yeah, I don't know where I saw a video or I read this post where this diver would go out to this site and he basically made friends with this octopus, like over, I don't know, the span of an amount of time. And then one day he noticed that he didn't see it anymore and then noticed that it had, it was started protecting like its eggs. And he was actually bringing food to the octopus. So ever since I read that, or I can't remember if it was a video or a post that I saw, but ever since then, I wondered if that made a difference in that octopus living or dying off like they usually would, you know, if it's like feeding.
Yeah.
So it kind of made me wonder.
It can more prolong a lot of it generally, at least from my research. And there have been some studies where they can actually affect like the brain chemistry of the animals because they're figuring out what exactly causes a lot of that behavior.
Oh.
And by changing in some of the hormone expression, I believe, they can cause them to lose a little bit more of that protective nature. So they can even maybe abandon the eggs as well. Yeah. It's very interesting.
Yeah. Wow. And this is why the rapid fire questions don't go very rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, last one. What motivates you to study and work in this field?
A lot of it is nature and nurture. I was raised around Monterey, so I've always been drawn to the ocean, you know, always exposed to it, went to the aquarium as a kid. And ever since I started going to the beach, I did tell my parents I wanted to study the ocean or work with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm surprised that I've stuck with that goal pretty well so far.
Yeah.
But just because like, and especially getting more context for that type of love over the years, or at least adding to that love, is learning how it works, why it works, and ultimately, I guess, the relationship humans have with it.
Yeah.
And I think that's really fascinating, whether it is, if you want to focus more on the negative aspects of our relationship with the ocean, or even the positives, how much inspiration we can get from it, how much even just childlike wonder from, say, a humpback whale reaching like right behind you right there. I think just I've always been fascinated with it. It's like, it is pretty much like an alien world. Whenever you scuba dive, you're basically an astronaut going down there to find out new life. I don't know, it's just such a different world, but we can also relate to it in so many ways, I guess.
Very true. Yes. And I don't think people really realize until people like us in the field kind of remind them that there's still so little that we know about it. And I don't think a lot of people, like, I know that people probably see that all the time, like, oh, we only know so much about the ocean, this percentage. But I don't think it really sinks into a lot of people until I want to say that's one of the reasons why I started the podcast, is because I kind of want to reach people that, even though they might not want to go into marine biology or marine science or even in the field in general, I still like to make the podcast for people that are just like, oh, I like the ocean. I kind of want to learn more about it. So it can kind of, I can pull people in from like different areas, whether they're going into the field. So I go more in depth with like episodes about marine life, but then also reach those people where they're like, oh, I want to learn more, even though just because I like the ocean, but not to the extent where we're at. And I think that's really cool to kind of input that in there, where talking about how it's like a completely different world, because it really is.
And honestly, I think that is so valuable. Like, because, not everybody is as obsessed with the ocean or octopuses or anything like that as like a lot of us may be. But it's still a great way to just show what's out there, because you may either bring in somebody who is, or you may create somebody who is, just by hearing about the enthusiasm and the breadth, I guess, of work that goes into it, whether it's science, communication, research, all of that good stuff. I think that's very, very valuable.
Awesome. Yeah, that's awesome. I love the way you put that. I have a lot of questions, but I figured since I've been following you for a while and I mainly see all of your scuba diving adventures, maybe we can kind of go into that, or, you know, kind of talk a little bit about yourself to the listeners, and then kind of go into why you got into scuba diving, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah. I guess we could start a little bit about the background there then.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like I mentioned, I grew up in Monterey, California, always going to the ocean, wanting to study it for as long as I could talk, pretty much. And a big part of that, I guess you could perceive it as a hurdle. And this is also just me being a child, knowing little about the field, I was like, if you want to study the ocean, you have to scuba dive because that's what all marine biologists do. They are in the lab and then they go and dive and collect things. They go back to the lab and then that's their day. So growing up, I was like, I'm going to be a scuba diver. I'm going to be a scuba diver. I'm going to do all of this good stuff. And a big actual impetus for that was actually one of my neighbors named Michael Gardino. He was a marine researcher, diver, instructor, and also my high school physics teacher. But he would always come back from his dives and he would show, talk to me about what he saw, how all of his equipment worked, and all of that. And I was just fascinated. He also volunteered at the Monterey Bay Aquarium as one of their divers, even worked on their dive staff as well, I believe. And he was always encouraging me to be able to dive there as well. And I would even recognize him in the kelp forest exhibit when he was doing like maintenance cleanings because he is one of the few people that never wore gloves. He had these massive, massive hands. And I could always recognize him. And then we'd, chat between the class there. He unfortunately passed away a few years ago. But he's always been just such a big inspiration for me. And we even have at the aquarium, there's an award dedicated to him for milestones in diving.
Oh, that's
In
awesome.
Marine. So he
That's
was honestly just a huge gem in the dive community, and he really inspired me to kind of get into that world, I guess.
Oh, that's awesome. It's always nice when you have that one teacher or idol that you kind of looked up to, like growing up in school, because I kind of had that too with my not marine biology teacher, shockingly, my biology teacher. And it she didn't really focus on like marine biology, but just focusing on like the science in the classroom and just how she dedicated her time to it. And how easily it was for her to teach students, even though, like, I don't know, she just did it so flawlessly and so easily to where even if somebody wasn't, if they thought the class was boring, it's like she did it so easily to where it was like, wow, this is actually really fascinating. The way, she's, te you could tell when a teacher's like really dedicated to like what they're actually
Oh,
teaching.
yeah.
And yeah, so it's really cool that you brought that up because I feel the same way. That person has always stood out to me, and I feel like that's really important to kind of keep those with us, keep those like memories and stuff with us, because that kind of helps motivate you at times when you kind of need it the most, when you kind of have those like down days, especially
Oh,
in this field. It's definitely hard. We talk about it on the podcast. It's not an easy field to get into. It's very competitive. So yeah. That's really awesome. So what is an experience that kind of stands out to you? I know you've been diving for a while and you have dived a lot. But is there like any in particular that kind of stand out to you that were like really
Boy.
amazing?
That is a toughie.
I
Yeah.
know.
So it's funny though, for as much as I post about diving, I am probably under 300 dives right now,
Oh,
which
okay.
granted can seem a lot this
Yeah.
especially newer, but like I don't know. I also know a lot of people who are like, oh yeah, I hit like 6,000 the other day. And
Oh
I'm
my
like,
gosh.
that's
Wow.
insane.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even if they're like not instructors, still that's insane.
Yeah.
But I've been diving since about 2016. That's when I got my open water
Okay.
certification, kind of moved up through the different levels. I got my scientific diving certification with UC Santa Cruz in 2021. That was really, really fun, actually. It was an intense but rewarding
Really?
course.
Okay.
Yeah. And then most recently, I completed my dive master certification, which was a big milestone.
Yeah.
So being able to lead like professional tours and experiences, but I think one of the things that's has stood out the most, I guess I can answer this in two ways.
Okay.
One's an amalgamation, and the other is a very specific event.
Okay.
I think I'll start with the specific one first
Okay.
then. It was back in. Oh, no. It was last year, actually, I believe. Yeah, December of 2022. Me and some friends decided to go diving over at a place called Monastery Beach in
Okay.
Carmel. It's got these really lush kelp forests that are just accessible right offshore. And we knew it was going to be nice because the winter brings in a lot of nice cold and clear water around
Yeah.
here. But we were not prepared for just how tropical it would look. I mean, it was
Oh,
very cold.
wow.
I'll say this, the
Okay.
water is
Yeah.
very cold, but It was just a breathtaking dive. I think I spent like an hour and 20 minutes down there, which is like definitely pushing it a little bit for my air consumption sometimes, for how much you're draining your scuba tank. But it was worth it. And that's actually where this kelp picture comes from, I think.
Oh,
But you can just see the sunlight just kind of
yeah. Oh my
beaming in through
gosh.
there. There were tons of like little tube snout fish swimming around. It seemed like the whole reef around the Monastery Beach kelp forest, at least the northern side, was just like coming alive. It was like a little mermaid moment almost.
Oh, that's awesome. It
Yeah,
looks like the
we could see
clarity
down
was
from like,
pretty visible.
oh yeah, we could see
Yeah.
down from like 50 feet, which is
Oh,
almost
wow.
unheard of in Monterey.
Yeah.
We boast a lot of things, you know, very biodiverse, very nutrient rich, and with that comes sometimes pretty bad visibility.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
Yeah, that was a heavenly dive.
Yeah. And you had the other one that you were going to go
Yeah,
into.
the other one is just a very kind of cumulative
Okay.
experience, and that's honestly, and what we were talking a little bit earlier about like passion, right?
Yeah.
I would say, seeing, that's the best way to phrase this, completing another person's open water certification. One of my favorite things to do actually is to help out new divers like get into this field. Whether it is just for recreation or if they have goals of like doing it for science, for photography or anything like that,
Right.
I always love to talk to students about that as well to see where they want to go with it. And then once they have completed like their pool sessions and then get into the like open ocean, I'm like sometimes more enthused about it than them, just because they're like, to quote a very obscure space fantasy or space opera series, you're taking your first step into a larger world. Pretty much.
Yeah.
Just in case that went over anyone's head, that's Obi-Wan Kenobi and Star Wars. I'm also a huge
it.
Star Wars nerd, but it's literally like a gateway to so many cool experiences. And then I always like tell them, ultimately, it's also a big appreciation for what you're exploring there, for the
Yeah.
ocean. You know, I know people who like, as you know, they would kind of think, oh yeah, these fish are kind of cool, but as soon as they got to see them in the wild, swimming by them, exploring their natural habitat, it's like a switch turns on sometimes.
Yeah,
I
it's
just
like a
love
completely different experience almost. Like you
that.
see that, like you said, that fish almost completely different because it's like, wow, that was actually in front of me instead of just being in a book or a picture.
And
Yeah.
that's my favorite thing. Like, as cheesy as it can sound sometimes, passion really is contagious, I would say, and enthusiasm. And
Yeah.
even some of the great like science communicators of our time, let's say like Steve Irwin, you know, you could
Ugh.
feel that.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important, honestly.
Yeah.
And it helps bring a lot of other people to places, animals, or ideas that they never may have considered if they hadn't seen this.
Yeah, that's very true. And that's really cool that you mentioned that because I feel like you said, passion, and you obviously love what you're doing. And you're portraying that into teaching others. And the fact that you get so excited when somebody does get their certification, I mean, it's cool because they probably are also capturing that moment too and thinking, wow, I had like the best instructor, or you know, they might hold on to that too. And then just like you hold on to certain people that you've looked up to.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's really cool to kind of hold on
It can be
to. And
almost generational in a soft way, I
yeah.
guess.
Yeah, and it's just really cool to hold on to that because you're making that small, either even if it's just a small difference to that person, a different outlook for that person to view our ocean a little differently. Like you said, whether they're going into the field, whether they're just doing it because they just want to and they just do it kind of for fun, like so that's really cool. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
Something I had I noticed that you do some night dives. And I'm
Yes.
very curious about that. And I had a question. So, how is it different from diving during the day than diving at night? Because
That's
I know
actually a very.
there could be a lot of different things. I know the equipment you probably use
Oh,
might be a
yeah.
little different, what you wear because it might be colder, and just the life that you see under the water. Like, how different is
Yeah. Oh, that's actually such a cool topic, actually.
it?
So generally, in at least here in Monterey, it's like 52 to 54 degree water year round. So we're
Yeah.
generally using the same equipment.
Okay.
What's really fun is that the distinction between the life you would see. The equipment is pretty much the same, though if I'm using like my camera, I use a big old Olympus rig with like strobes and lights. You'll bust out ultimately a lot more lights for that, just so you can be able to focus on things. Whereas the daytime, you may want to work with more natural light. You also do want to have a personal torch on you, whether it's a hand mount or just something like attached to you, just so you can like navigate, point things out, and find your buddies. So that's one thing you will absolutely want while you are down there at night. The water temperature is pretty much the same. I'll say that much. The hardest part is actually getting out afterwards sometimes. So say you're like a nice balmy like August or July night, you're getting out, you can take off your wetsuit and you're perfectly fine. Whereas in December, January, February, you're getting out, you're shivering more outside than in the water, because you've been able to at least heat up that wetsuit with your own water. But I typically use a dry suit, whether it's day or night. It's just a little more convenient for me, especially if I want to dive like before or right after work, because you're nice and dry on the inside. Yeah, believe you. I think the podcast episodes that I've listened to, you've talked a little about like DUI and their dry suits as well. Very high quality, very good, especially if you can get them custom fit. So you can stay nice and toasty down there. But aside from the equipment, yeah, like I was saying, the life is what really changes, because you'll see a lot of animals that would normally be just kind of hiding away in the crevices, under the recesses. Or even not, or even just out in the open ocean, not even close to the coast. Sometimes they'll come in, so you'll see a lot of little migrations. Whether it's more kind of like horizontal migrations from like the outer parts of our bay, or even more vertical migration. And that's where you get what we call dial vertical migration, where animals will move up from the deep sea, and especially because Monterey itself has a nice big underwater canyon right offshore, you get some strange weirdos coming in, especially over towards Monastery Beach, because it's right by the canyon. That's where we get a lot of cool upwelling, weird gelatinous things, even like really ancient types of fish like chimera, ratfish, weird old time shark or relative of sharks. And a lot of those animals are going up to feed, so they're trying to find their food sources. And it's largely because also they are more concealed with night. So that's why you get more gelatinous things that can blend in with the darkness. So you're always guaranteed to find some things, maybe like gooseberries, little comb jellies coming up sometimes. Of course, it can always be seasonal, but I really enjoy seeing a lot of those animals creep out, and especially little octopuses. Anytime I can find an octopus on a dive, it makes it, no matter what else went wrong. And at night, you will find a ton of them, especially a little red octopus, Octopus rubescens. That's a scientific name, crawling around. Over the years, I've gotten pretty good at spotting them down there, just from their behaviors or how inconspicuous or attempting to be inconspicuous they can be. So always love to see octopuses. And then you can also get some bioluminescence too. That's always
Ooh,
really
love
cool. So you
that.
get little plankton or other bacteria, making light with compounds in their bodies. And actually, 2 days ago, I believe, I was out diving with a friend, and this was very close to shore. We swam out, and we hadn't really turned on our lights just yet, and we could just like see underneath the waves as we were kicking out, just like these like more lighter kind of swishes. And we're like, oh, is it the light from like shore kind of bouncing off of us or anything? But no, we were far off, or far away enough that we could tell it was actually these tiny plankton. And then we just swished our arms through it. And a lot of people may know bioluminescence either by fireflies or by like glowing waves, especially like down towards the southern coast of California or the Caribbean. But it's so cool to have that right in our own backyard as well. Especially if you're just about to drop down, you can just see your hand having these nice trails, or even like sea otters swimming by, and you can kind of see them very faintly. Yeah, a lot of that visibility is, of course, with light levels, and even that can be seasonal. But those are just some of the big differences I'd say with night diving.
Yeah. And you said that was 2 days ago. So there was a little bit of bioluminescence 2 days
Yeah.
ago up in Monterey. That's really cool. I know I always try to time it. I want to go down with my, well, not in the water, but I've always wanted to go down to the Monterey or like by Big Sur and get
Oh,
those
yeah.
long exposure shots. Oh, that's been like my bucket list.
Oh,
Yeah.
yeah.
Have you ever heard anything underwater? So, like dolphins, have you ever been like encountered like whales, like their sounds underneath the water while diving?
I have not been so lucky.
Ah.
Though one of my friends, he recently did some diving, and this was just off of San Carlos Beach. It's one of the most dived sites in North America, I think.
Oh, okay.
Super, super close to shore. He could hear with his buddies some whales vocalizing down there.
Oh, I love that. Oh, that's
Yeah,
awesome.
I know. It was so, I was so jealous. I have not been
Yeah.
able to. The main thing you will hear are bubbles and of course a big pop, like constant popping sounds, like when you
Oh, okay.
pop rocks, the candy. And that's just of things like eating, moving around on the rocks, because sound travels so fast in the
Yeah.
water and it can come from so many different directions. It's just this big old, almost staticky sound, but a little more spaced out. That's pretty much the most I've heard.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I haven't had any cool auditory
Right.
things, unless the screaming of my buddies when we see something really cool. Can get loud down there.
And have you ever, so, but kind of back to night diving, have you guys ever just like turned off your lights for a second, just in pitch dark,
Oh,
just
yeah.
tried to like see everything around you? Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's one of those things, especially it can, I guess one another big equipment change that can happen is, especially if you're doing photography down there, you'll go less for like wide angle stuff with like any big dome ports. You're just going for macro pretty much,
Okay, yeah.
because like even if it's like really clear, the most you're really going to be able to capture is like within 5 feet
Yeah,
anyways. So
yeah.
but that's but going back to your question there, yeah, we've absolutely done that. Just like turn off your lights, hang out, do some like meditation almost.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so me
Interesting,
and some
yeah.
buddies, this is like actually a few years ago, for a little a scuba club for Santa Cruz, we went out, just kind of like held hands down there and just kind of, as we would say, just vibed for a little bit.
Cool.
It was very
That's really
nice. And
cool.
then you can also swish your hand around, see if there are any little blue sparks, you know, erupting from there. Always really
Yeah.
neat.
Very nice. Very cool. Have you ever had a scary experience, night or day diving?
Yeah, definitely. I would say some, I guess some intimidating ones can be like first experiences, right? Your first night dive is always a
Yeah.
little
I
intimidating
can
because
only
you're like,
imagine.
I am surrounded by pitch darkness. I am strapped to an apparatus that is only
Yeah.
so reliable, and I could be 60 feet down
Yeah.
underwater.
Ooh.
And especially if you're over like really deep areas, there's that kind of like, what is it,
You're like,
thalassophobia? It's like
what's down
fear of
there?
deep
Yeah.
water. Yeah.
Yeah.
I had that a tiny bit when I first started night diving. I haven't had too many major incidents, I guess.
Okay.
But actually, one that was a little, I guess, daunting was in January of this year. I did a lot of like dive firsts this year.
Okay.
I did my first blackwater dive. Do you know what a blackwater dive is?
No.
So blackwater diving is like the ultimate night dive, I would
Oh
say.
gosh.
So that is where, especially in like more tropical areas like the Philippines,
Oh.
Kona, and like Hawaii,
Okay.
you are taking a boat out over potentially hundreds of feet of water, and they will determine where you're going to go depending on the currents. And you're basically dropping maybe a line with some lights on it so everybody can make navigate a little bit, but you're just kind of
Okay.
suspended in the water column, like over all that space, and just waiting for everything to do that dial vertical migration upwards. So you're trying to see what strange things are happening. And this can not necessarily be over the open ocean, but as close to it as you can within safety. And I did that in Cozumel, Mexico. And that was really, really cool because we saw like a ton of little weird little larval animals coming up because they're so
Okay.
small and they need
Yeah.
to stay hidden and safe. Weird jellies, squid, octopuses. But there's also that kind of feeling like you are above what could be a canyon, you know, it's pitch black and you're
Right.
not close to shore. That's the main thing, because at least in Monterey, all of our diving is like shore diving. So you're
Right.
right by it.
Yeah.
So we're almost out to sea, and the only main way you can find your way back is this little light or a few lights on a tether that could potentially drift away depending on how the waves come. One night that we did it, the waves were so massive, that the boat felt like a roller coaster. There were times where
Oh,
we almost felt
wow.
like we would kind of like pop up a little bit over it, and just getting out of the water was a huge
Oh,
challenge.
yeah, I bet.
Yeah, so
Jeez.
that was definitely daunting. But then in the water too, you're like, is this line gonna float super far away, and I'm gonna have to like kick
Yeah.
on the surface, or
Oh,
yeah. But for
jeez.
the most part, I would say, yeah, I don't have too many fears, or haven't had it
That's
that
good.
many major things with diving
Yeah. So
so far.
far, knock on wood.
Yeah.
But that's good, especially for how much you've been diving. Like, that's pretty good that you haven't really had a bad experience. Let's see. Oh, how was your experience in, you mentioned you went to the Philippines recently.
Yes.
How was your experience diving there? You said it was about a week long. What was like, what did you guys go in like expecting? What happened?
Yeah, so the Philippines is honestly one of like the most well-renowned areas for diving and macro photography in the
Oh,
world, I would say, just because it has like a huge amount of life there, amazing coral reefs, and just a lot of animals, especially things like nudibranchs, little sea slugs, different mantis shrimp, all these little weird invertebrates that are pretty iconic for a lot of people. And we expected a good amount of dive because we had already kind of, or I'd kind of already warmed up with my trip to Cozumel earlier, which was also very intense, like 3+ dives a day, short or diving right off the back of our resort, which is right by the coast. So I was ready for that. But I would say we were very much hoping to get a lot of cool macro stuff, all the little things, because like it's hard to come across that anywhere else in the world. At least my roommate who I was going with, he doesn't usually have like a list of animals that he wants to check out, but I very much do, just because I wanted to see them at least. So I was like, I want to see a mantis shrimp, I want to find all the different octopuses on the reefs, and I want to, yeah. And of course, a lot of amazing things about these trips is they're also kind of workshops too. The thing about at least cold water diving here is that, it's so much of an effort to get all of your stuff out, make sure it's all ready to go, especially with your cameras, get your dry suits and everything ready. So you kind of want to be really dialed in for a lot of it. Whereas with warm water diving, it's so much easier. I
Oh,
think
I bet.
Yeah, you just put on like a shorty, put on your scuba equipment and just hop in. It's easier to get in and out, clean off your gear. You're not as cold or shivering or salty, or well, maybe salty, not as sandy sometimes. So it's a lot easier. And we could spend so much more time in the water too. Like our air consumption could sometimes be a little better because you can be a little shallower where there's just still so much stuff to work with, especially if your resort has a reef on it that you can just go and play around in. So it's almost a way to like test out new tools, techniques, all of that fun stuff. So it allowed me, and I was prepared for it at least. Yeah, it allows you to really just hone in on a lot of stuff, a lot of room for growth, I would say. And when you get back here, maybe you'll forget all about that, but like you can at least work on it. Yeah, but a lot of it was like getting up early in the morning, having breakfast, getting on a boat. That was all part of like the packaged experience. Going out, doing at least two dives at different spots that our dive master had picked out for us, and coming back, maybe having lunch, and then we'd do more diving at the resort itself. Maybe even doing some night dives. That's actually where I got to find some really cool octopuses when we would actually go out on the boats at night. Like one of my favorites is a coconut octopus. They're the type that like to take the little shells and just like use them as a little shield or mobile home. Yeah, those ones are so cute. But I did get my wish. I got to see a lot of mantis shrimp, of course, plenty of octopuses, and of course, a lot of weird, strange nudibranchs. They're like the Pokemon of the sea.
Oh my gosh, I love nudibranchs. They are just so fascinating to me.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It was really warm too. I mean, like, granted, anything above 60 for me is warm. I'm like a
You're so
fog
used
kid,
to, yeah, you're so used to the Monterey weather to where you go there and you're like,
Exactly,
this is amazing.
exactly. It was very humid too, so nothing really dried ever. But like it is nice to have that kind of just change for a little bit.
Change of scenery, change, just different experience in general.
And
Cool.
you don't feel, I guess I didn't feel as tired as well. That's one thing. Like
Oh,
we could just
okay.
like keep going all day. It's probably the weather, it's probably the ease of, getting all of your equipment ready. But I
Yeah.
could probably, it'd be very, very difficult for me to do four dives in Monterey in one day.
Okay.
But
Okay.
anywhere warm, anywhere tropical with ease of
Yeah.
access like that, it
Yeah.
just, you feel like you got to do it, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. I
Maybe that's
like
like a money's worth thing, or maybe it's just like actual enthusiasm. I don't know. Maybe there's
I
a
can see it being
balance.
both. Like your mentality, you're there for a week. It's a different environment. Like, the whole experience is a little different. But then energy-wise too, like you said, when you're going into colder waters, you're using a lot more energy to get that equipment on, going in the water, then you're coming out, like you said, you're freezing. So you're kind of using up, more energy trying to like, keep yourself more composed as you're like coming out of the water, freezing. But yeah, that's really cool. Going to Monterey, I noticed that. Now, did you start recently volunteering at the aquarium? Is that new? Or have you kind of always done
Here's where we get into the big life story part. So,
that?
and this is even outside of diving, actually. So
Okay.
I, especially with Mike's encouragement, I started volunteering at the aquarium when I was in high school.
Oh my gosh, awesome.
A program that basically allowed us to work on the floor with guests, interpreting all the different exhibits, especially with a conservation angle. We were called the Teen Conservation Leaders. And that was really, really rewarding. It not only helped me build up kind of like public speaking skills,
Yeah.
interpersonal, like soft and hard skills, but also really helped add further context, like I said, to like why I love the ocean and why I want to
Yeah.
make sure it is as safe as possible and protected.
Yeah.
And I kept that connection throughout high school, college. I worked on and off again in that same department, and even helped train newer young volunteers, newer students for that.
Okay, cool.
But then for I would say I still kept volunteering a little bit, and then more recently I also joined the volunteer dive team there. So that's
Cool.
where you can sign up for different shifts, and you can be doing maintenance. You could do cleanings or other tasks into the different exhibits. And I think I mentioned a little earlier, Mike was always very, very encouraging for me to dive there, and especially to dive in the kelp forest exhibit, because it's like kelp forests are my favorite habitat.
Yeah.
Just because of all they represent with balance, ecology, all that good stuff. And I think it was February of this year, I believe, that I was able to finally get on that team. The wait list historically has sometimes been about 5 years long.
Oh my gosh, wow, okay.
Yeah, like
Wow.
literally 5 years. And then some people have like moved or changed
Yeah.
career paths by then, which is always funny. But after COVID, it was really, really shortened because people had done just that in that time. And there was nobody filling that list in the meantime. So I was able to join that. And it's been honestly a dream. It's been really nice being able to explore that exhibit, and then not only to take care of it, whether it's cleaning the windows, helping vacuum up some of the kelp, but also just like the interaction sometimes with Pete, with guests who are
Yeah.
like there on site, because we're doing this during open hours too.
Yeah.
And like I mentioned, like that enthusiasm, that passion, and even probably going back to when I was a little kid going there and seeing the divers in there and be like, oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
So cool to be able to be that for somebody else too, because
Yeah.
we are highly encouraged to interact with the guests when we're there. It's not just clean the windows, ignore them. Like if you can play rock, paper, scissors with
Yeah,
them,
that's so
you can
cute.
do pictures and stuff. I like to try to look up what the most hip like dances or poses are for pictures, so I can surprise the kids sometimes.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And then you can see that, especially with the parents too. They're like
Yeah.
super glad that their kid is having this cool experience, and then you can either capture it or just remember it later on. It's
Yeah.
super rewarding.
That's awesome. Yeah, usually every time we go to the aquarium, I'm always seeing someone in there and it's really cool. I'm just like, I wonder what it's like in there, And do you guys like the more experience you get in the tanks, do you kind of, I don't want to say develop a relationship, but do you like see certain fish where it's like, oh, there's so and so today, where you kind of like see their ha I don't know how to explain it. Like you
I
kind
see,
of see
yeah. Got
their
familiarity with the
habits.
animals.
Yeah, and you kind
Yeah.
of get to know like their habits of like where they are in the tank and kind of know their whereabouts a lot more and get to know them a little bit more.
I would say that is more the case for only a few specific animals, some of
Okay.
either the fewer or the more charismatic ones. Say, like
Okay.
in the kelp forest, we have a giant sea bass, and they are very interesting. They get fed on their own time
Oh,
by
okay.
staff divers, and they can be very curious with people by the windows and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But for the most part, interestingly, a lot of the fish tend to kind of avoid us, which
Okay.
is totally fair, honestly, from them. But the only times they really get like super close to us is if you have food, pretty much.
Right, yeah.
So if
Okay.
we have any feeding divers, which is also another thing that you could do, you can be a show diver for the kelp
Okay.
forest feeding programs. Those are all our volunteers who get to do that.
Oh,
The fish know what time they're going to be fed because they've just been kind of had that routine.
yeah.
And they can smell it as well. So they have these big buckets that they bring down with them to just kind of like pull out the clouds of food. And even the leopard sharks that we have there will just like hop into the bucket sometimes.
Oh my gosh, I love leopard sharks. Oh, love them. Have you ever swam with them in San Diego?
I have not. No.
La Jolla Beach area?
I hear a lot about La Jolla,
Oh
but
my
I have not
gosh.
been able to go myself.
Yes, I've been once. I went with Erica Page and Erica Worth a couple years ago. We did like a girls trip over there because Erica Page lives in Newport, so we kind of met her over there. And we did it, and that was my first time like snorkeling. So we put wetsuits on, but we did basically just snorkel out. And you can walk out pretty far. Like you can walk out pretty like chest deep into the water and be pretty far away from the shore. And it was just at first I'm like, oh my gosh, like what do you do? This is my first time just being like all the way out here. I was like terrified. But once you get in there and you just look down and you just kind of float there, it's like the most peaceful thing in the world. Like all that fear just like went away. And then you see these little leopard sharks just swim underneath you. They didn't want anything to do with you. Like they didn't care. As long as you didn't bother them, they didn't bother you. Plus, there's like no reports of them really attacking people. So like you have nothing
I
to
mean,
worry about.
you can't even fit like a tennis ball in their mouths for your fists in their mouths anyways. They're
No,
big sweethearts.
they were amazing, but yeah.
At the aquarium, we literally do like to call them the puppy dogs of the sea.
Oh, they really are. Yeah. Oh, that's
And
awesome.
actually, they will, those leopard sharks will sometimes approach us when we're by the glass or cleaning
Okay.
some areas, actually.
Yeah.
It's like sometimes I'll be like trying to like get a little piece of algae or something on there, and then a shark will just kind of like come right on up through my arm a little bit. Yeah,
That's
they're
really
kind of
cool.
they're fearless for us.
Yeah.
Oh, there actually is one more animal that is very, very charismatic, very fun
Yeah.
to see in the kelp forest especially, and that's our big wolf eel. We have this very large one. They
Oh,
are Have you ever seen
okay.
a wolf eel before?
I want to say I don't know if it was a wolf eel. I just remember seeing one at the aquarium, but I don't think I saw it in the kelp exhibit.
Oh yeah. Well,
Yeah.
she can be very reclusive sometimes.
Okay.
It likes to hang out in some of the crevices behind there. And for anyone who hasn't seen one of these, they basically this big, long eel-like fish. They're not an actual eel. They're not in the same family of fishes, but they are known for being, well, I think they look really cute, but people say they're very ugly. They got this big
Oh.
snarl, these big sharp teeth that they use for cracking
Oh.
into like sea urchins, crabs, and stuff like that.
Oh, okay.
And they like to slink around and kind of hiding, like, confined spaces. But every now and then, the wolf eel that's been in that kelp forest for years and years will come on out. And sometimes it actually likes to hop into the arms of our divers and just
Oh
rest
my
there.
gosh,
Yeah,
that
we've
is
had some,
awesome.
I have been on the other side presenting a kelp forest feeding show. Where it has kind of like come out, swam around, but I haven't been able to witness it hop into the arms of
Oh,
somebody just yet.
yeah.
But it absolutely does happen for our other feeding presenters sometimes, where they're like,
That's the
oh, we're
cutest
gonna
thing.
stop everything because this big old long fish wants to come and rest in my arms.
Oh, like a little baby.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I would,
Yeah.
it's a good way to
That's,
vary up the day, right?
yeah. That is cute. Oh, could you imagine just going home and having that experience? That's pretty cool.
Right? I would still feel the weight, I think.
Right?
Well, When I first got to hang out with the giant Pacific octopuses behind the scenes for a little bit, and like
I was actually going to ask you that. I was like, have you spent time with that was going
to
be
I haven't
my
dove
question.
With them, unfortunately, but I've gotten to help feed them sometimes.
Yeah.
And like, I was on cloud nine the whole time, right? But it's just so amazing how curious they are and how much they want to like inspect you. So they'll like run their arms all up over yours.
Yeah.
Tasting you, trying to get a good sense of your texture. And sometimes they'll try to pull you in a little bit. So you're constantly peeling them off as well, which is always super amazing. I almost got pulled in by one who, and this was funny, it was like a little stumpy arm that she had. It wasn't even like a fully grown one because we think it had been bitten off by like a predator before we got her.
Oh, okay.
But it still had so much tensile strength there that I was fighting her for a little bit.
Oh my gosh. So is there two at the aquarium right now? Or
we currently have two. Yeah.
Okay.
And one of them is even laying eggs at the moment.
Oh, so
yeah. So we were talking a little bit about that process, right?
Yeah.
And when you mentioned that post, the person had been feeding an octopus.
Mm-hmm.
That's something we observe sometimes as well. They can actually kind of change that behavior, like for little brief moments. One of ours that is taking care of the eggs, she has actually eaten a little bit lately. And she's shown a lot of more like kind of vibrance and awareness, because normally when octopuses are taking care of those eggs and they enter what we call senescence, where they pretty much start to shut down just to protect their eggs, normally they'll just kind of stay at that.
Yeah.
But and every now and then maybe they'll look a little more red and a little more aware and maybe even go for a stroll. But our mom right now, she has actually been showing a little more activity, which is very interesting. So we think she may be around for a little while longer. It's like a little more of a delay.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's like such a sad thing to think about, but it's also so amazing to like just learn about them and their life cycle. But it's like, no, I don't want it to happen, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think, what is it? I always like to tell guests, it's like beautiful, but it's tragic, but beautiful. That's what I say. I lead with
really
the
is.
More dour one, but
yeah.
And that's one of those things. You don't want them to leave, you know, thinking like, oh my gosh, this octopus is gonna die. It's like, oh, this octopus is an amazing mom. They're doing all this stuff and they're just so cool and intricate. And it's strange how we can relate to them almost despite them looking literally like aliens, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's very true. So whenever after the fact, are they gonna like take the eggs and release them in Monterey Bay? Like how do they handle that if you're allowed to talk about it?
I can talk about that. So we don't have any fertilized eggs. That's the thing. And that's another like use a tragic aspect of it is they will undergo this process. They'll lay this big curtain of eggs and cover it, not move from it for like months until they would pass away.
Yeah.
Even if they're not fertilized. Now, some octopuses can actually store DNA packets from males and fertilize their eggs later on before they start laying them. So that's why sometimes in an aquarium, you'll have an octopus that lays fertilized eggs, but you never introduce them to a male. It's just they held on to them. But as far as I know, we haven't had any fertilized eggs ever for them.
Okay.
But we'll let them take care of them. We'll let them do their thing, pretty much. We don't want to interrupt that process, but we may take them a little behind the scenes so they can be a little more comfortable before they pass away.
Oh.
Yeah, but we'll also analyze the eggs as well. And that's actually a big part of that initial process. As soon as we see them start to lay eggs, we'll at least take one of them behind the scenes to see if it is fertilized or not.
Oh, okay. Well, that's really interesting. How often are you like behind the scenes getting to work with them? Do you do it often or is it just kind of...
I'm not an animal care volunteer, unfortunately, or staff member, but, you know, if I'm wandering around behind the scenes and I see someone I know, I'm like, hey, can I go say hi?
Yeah.
Pretty much. Yeah. Cool. And in my normal day-to-day job, there are some times where I actually do pass through that area as well. Mm-hmm. So I always kind of like tilt my head a little bit, see if there's anything interesting going on there.
Yeah.
So I always like to stay up to date with a lot of
people. Yeah, that's good. Now, do they have the eggs like visible in the tank right now at the aquarium or so you can actually see it right now at the aquarium?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Cool. Absolutely.
I'll have to look out.
I could text you some pictures of them.
Cool. Yeah. Oh, that would be awesome. Yeah. Cause it's kind of hard. Like every time we go to the aquarium and now we take our daughter to the aquarium, it's so hard. Cause that area is so packed. Obviously all these people want to see The octopus, everybody. So we're always like, okay, we'll come back. And then we never get a chance to go back. So we're all, because it's always so packed in that spot. So I'll have to make it a point to try to go look and look. Yeah, that's awesome. What would you, so I know we're, I'm kind of going back to like scuba diving.
Yeah, sure.
What equipment would you kind of recommend for a beginner, for somebody listening that like might be a little hesitant on getting into it? And that kind of goes into another question too. That where is it? If you were to like give advice to someone that is hesitant about going into scuba diving, like I've always wanted to, but I'm not so much hesitant. I just really haven't had the chance to like start the course. But for someone that might be a little hesitant on starting, what advice would you give them to kind of move forward with that process? And then maybe you can kind of talk about like maybe just simple equipment you would recommend to someone when they
Oh
first.
yeah. Absolutely. And especially when this is one of the biggest things I've come up with whenever I help out with teaching classes, check your budget, of course. Because scuba diving is not
No.
an easily accessible sport, largely because of that, and especially if you get in underwater photography too. But going all the way back to the roots, I'd say the most important piece of equipment that you want to make sure is your own, at least, because honestly, wherever you go, you can rent equipment, and it's usually not like egregious anyways, because a lot of the dive shops know how in demand they are, so they don't have to set these huge, prices for them. But the most important piece of equipment is your mask. So your face mask that you use, because you want it to have a good fit. You want it to have like good lenses that work with your eyes, because some people need prescriptions as well. And just to make sure that what is it? It's something that you can easily bring with you anywhere as well. I normally actually bring a lot of my own dive gear with me, partly to save money, just so I can use my own equipment and I'm comfortable with it. But if I need to, whether it's like carry on or anything, abandon anything, I will always carry my mask with me. So that's what you want. And if you go to a dive shop, they can help you figure out what a good fit is for your mask. I always say don't order a mask online, especially if you're not going to try it on beforehand, because you're also generating more carbon if you have to send it back. But yeah, you want your mask. Usually a lot of dive shops, they will also ask that you have your own what we call skin gear. So that's just the stuff you would use if you were skin diving or snorkeling slash free diving. So you want your mask, a snorkel, your boots, your fins, and gloves. And now boots and fins, or sorry, I'd say more of gloves are generally more used for like cold water diving, right? So sometimes what you are purchasing or what you're prioritizing to get can also vary depending on where you live too. We have to have a lot more exposure protection here in Monterey. That's why you also need a hood as well. Yeah, like say if you're in Hawaii, you may not need to, so you can let your hair flow out and your head be fully exposed to the water. But here, it's that 52 degree water, so you want to be nice and snug there. But I'd say like wetsuits are pretty important. As for the actual scuba equipment, though, I would say that's one where you want to figure out how much you're going to be diving, typically, and that can also go into like career choice or proximity to the ocean even sometimes. I have pretty much all my own equipment. I have my own tank. I have my own regulator system to deliver the oxygen to everything, and that's just because I know I'm diving a lot, and if I want to dive when a shop isn't open, that's one thing. But I'd say mask is most important. And then in the meantime, I know I've met some people who, and even actually I myself was like this for a long time. I was like, I don't want to even like borrow or rent anything until I know it's mine. But I also think it's valuable to like see what's out there, Like if you don't need a tank, that you don't absolutely require a tank for work or anything, you can rent them. And if you can, it can work with your schedule. And even getting hand-me-down equipment can also be helpful as well. Yeah. And that can also depend on where your dive community is. Like if you are here in Monterey, there's people giving away old equipment or lending it out or selling it for like super cheap rate all the time. If you're in, say, like Boulder, Colorado, actually, I scratch that. I meet a lot of people who got certified in Boulder, Colorado. Maybe that's why it came to mind. But if you're, yeah, say you're like somewhere super landlocked where there's like barely any diving at all, except maybe in quarries, then you can kind of like look at your options for buying permanent gear.
Right.
Or just like brand new gear even.
Yeah.
Well, let's see. Am I forgetting anything right now? Oh. But exposure protection, also that's a big thing. Like here in Monterey, we use 7 millimeter wetsuits typically, bare
Okay.
minimum. Whereas in like the Philippines, you could get away with like a 1 to 2 millimeter suit.
Okay.
And a lot of that
Okay.
can be more less protection for water temperature, more of just for like making sure you don't rub up against anything, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it all depends on your needs, I'd say.
Yeah. And like you said too, with renting out, maybe somebody wants to kind of figure out what they're more comfortable with, what type of mask they
Yeah,
might want.
absolutely.
So
Yeah.
that's probably a good option too for some people. But I could see myself also being like, well, I'd rather just own it, you know? That way
Yeah,
you
and I
start
think
getting more comfortable with like, okay, how do I make this like work for me? Then you kind of learn of like little things you have to do before you get into the water, and then you kind of get to know your own equipment, and then you just know how, and then you feel more comfortable going into the water too, because you're like, okay, like this is
Definitely.
mine. I just feel like it kind of adds on to that, just feeling more comfortable getting in the water.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I know people who buy their own gear before they even take the class, like all
Oh,
of their gear.
wow.
And I'm like, you are dead set on this.
Yeah, wow.
And I think it all, yeah, it all depends on like what your resources are sometimes. Like if you can do it and you know that, hey, I'm gonna want this suit or
Yeah.
these fins, that's good. But also I do not draw any distinction between that and also being like, I'm gonna test out these different, I'm gonna rent out this set of fins this time, this set of fins this time,
Yeah.
just to see how I do in the water with it. Because
Yeah.
even trying something on in like on dry land in a shop, that can be very different once you get in the water.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very true. What would you recommend? Well, were you always into the underwater photography? Like, did you go into scuba diving thinking like I
Oh,
want to do that
yeah.
from the start, or did you like gradually get into
I totally forgot about that.
it?
Especially when we were talking about dive history. Yeah. So I didn't really think that much about underwater photography. I was like, oh,
Okay.
that's cool. You know, people are like showing off what they have. It's probably really easy, right? But then in, it was like 2019, I got a GoPro. It was like an old dinky GoPro. And it was mainly just so I could like show people on like Instagram or
Yeah.
to my family what I was seeing out there. And it wasn't even
Yeah.
a lot of scuba diving I was doing at the time because I didn't have a lot of my own equipment and I didn't have like a super steady job, so I couldn't afford a lot of it. But I was doing a lot of snorkeling, a lot of free diving around Monterey. And I was like, I just want to show people what I've been seeing.
Yeah.
And then in 2020, when the pandemic hit and we were all stuck inside for a little while, I was luckily living very close to the ocean. I was living with my folks here in Monterey for the summer at least. And I started diving with some actual dedicated photographers who I was friends with, or were friends
Okay.
with. And they were like, hey, you want to like borrow one of my cameras? Or yeah,
Oh
one of
my
my buddies who
gosh.
lives in Seattle now, he was like, hey, you want to borrow a camera? I'm like,
No
sure, yeah, I'd be down.
pressure.
Because I'd been seeing his photos and I was like, those are all so cool.
Yeah.
And I tried it out for the summer and I learned how to do underwater photography, or at least get like the fundamentals. And
Right.
I had not really taken any photography courses or anything, so I had to kind of start from scratch.
Right.
But over that summer, I just fell in love with it, got my own camera. It was like a smaller scale as Olympus TG5, which is honestly a fantastic beginner camera. It's like a very
Okay,
good
good to
point and
know.
shoot. It's got amazing like macros. You can look at all the little things,
Oh,
and
okay.
it's easy to get parts for it to also bring it underwater. I mean, it's generally waterproof, but if you can get housing for it
Right.
to protect it from pressure and everything like that,
Yeah.
way better.
Okay. Good to
Yeah. But
know.
then
Yeah.
I got hooked, and then I got a more, not that's not to use this word, but like more serious rig last year for my
Yeah.
Olympus EM1 Mark II, which is this kind of heavier duty one. But and since then I've been really trying to up my game a little bit, and but it's not like to necessarily do like competitions or anything. I'm not as
Right.
interested in that.
Yeah.
It's honestly more just to show off what's down there still. I
Yeah.
still try to carry that, and every now and then, especially when you're interacting with people who are a lot more serious about it, you can kind of get in your own head, like, should I be like focusing on this type of stuff? Or like,
Yeah,
should I
it
be,
definitely can happen. Yeah, once you get into social media and yeah, definitely.
Oh my
Ugh,
gosh. I
yeah.
mean,
Yeah.
social media, it's a blessing and a curse. I'm not gonna say where the
It
scale is on there,
is.
but
Yeah.
yeah, and you get into that, but every now and then, especially after, say, like, especially after a trip like going to the Philippines, I try to ground myself. Like,
Yeah.
I want to just share what's down there. That's my actual goal. And while I'm not tr saying I shouldn't try to improve, I just shouldn't try to like kill myself. I shouldn't try to like
Yeah.
workhorse it just because like I see everybody else is on the grind. I'm more in it for just spreading the love.
Yeah, exactly. And the pictures you take are so pretty. Like I was looking at them earlier too, and
Oh, thanks so
I just
much.
loved looking at them. And I really like that you mentioned that because I'm really into photography too, and I would love to get into underwater photography. But I need to start doing the more snorkeling and underwater, but because it's a lot, but I enjoy photography. I've been doing it for a while. And I'm out on the boat all the time in Monterey. At least I used to be. And it's like to someone to where they might see a humpback whale like breach 5 times, they're like, wow, that was so yesterday. But to me, like I could take a picture of that whale 3 different times of it breaching, and every picture is like fascinating to me. It's almost like you see something new. It's like it's angled different. People probably look at it and like, who cares? I'm like, but I do, because like you're just seeing it from a different perspective. And it just like kind of brings life to the photo that I can share with other people. And so I really like that you made that comment of just you're bringing out the beauty of it. And I think that's what's great about photography. Instead of getting kind of in your head about it, you kind of have to take a step back and just think of, well, why did I like this to begin with? And then go back to that mindset and show people like, well, I'm showing this. Like, it might not be the prettiest picture, but look at this animal. It's so interesting, and learn about it and the life cycle of it. Like recently I did one on here on the podcast, and it was a chitin post that I did. And I'm like, it's not the prettiest picture, but I love chitins. And I
Doesn't even
just
have a
like,
face.
yeah. And I just like kind of geeked out in the post because I just love chitin so much. I'm like, somebody probably looked at it and was like, what's so special about it? But to me, I'm like, it's a chitin.
And you know what? You might inspire somebody to get really into chitons with
Right?
that
I
too.
know. I love it.
Yeah, that's why, like, it's funny because I always say like an octopus makes the dive no matter what, right? And
Right.
if I see one, I'll try to photograph it. And I know people who are kind of like, well, octopuses are kind of boring. You can't get any interesting shots of them. Like, that doesn't matter. It's an octopus.
I know. It's like they have their own little personalities. It's like it's so cute.
And obviously people can have their own priorities with
Yeah.
photography, right?
Oh,
But
yeah.
like, yeah, and mine is just showing off cool animals pretty much.
Yeah, that's
Yeah.
awesome.
Because it can build empathy, build that
Yeah.
connection too.
Yeah. And like I mentioned in the beginning, like with the podcast, and I'm sure you hopefully, maybe you feel the same way, is like you're not only reaching those people that, oh yeah, that's so interesting, or oh, it's on my bucket list to see that animal, but maybe we're reaching those people to where it's like, oh, I've never seen that before. I've never even seen a picture of that octopus before. And that's really fascinating. That's really pretty. We're kind of reaching those people from both sides where it's like, you don't have, we don't have to do this to reach people that are already in the field. Like it's nice to reach those people that you can kind of help educate and show them how pretty life can be underwater, and just kind of spread it that way.
Yeah,
So,
and that's especially in like my line of work, that's just
yeah.
something that is so emphasized. It's not like othering people or not even just like trying to appeal to one specific crowd,
Right. Yeah.
You want to be able to have a general thing to, and what is that's the phrase, like, rising tides bring up all ships, right? But just like if everybody can get in on what we're talking about, that's all the more better for it,
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. I think that's all the questions I have. I feel like there's more that popped in my head along the episode, but is there anything else you want to share or give advice to or kind of talk about?
I guess just to give like a just one little thing. I didn't talk about it too much, and you know what? I will mention it. I know we talked a little bit about it earlier, but I'll drop a little thing. My day job, aside from volunteer volunteering at the aquarium. I'm also working at the aquarium as a science communicator for them, as a what we call a naturalist. And a lot of it is talking about these animals, whether it's on microphone or in person for like a feeding or something.
Yeah.
But like we were talking about, like communication is just so important about that.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things that I think is the most, I guess, what was it, one of the driving forces pretty much for like a lot of the changing discussion about, you know, these animals or any type of animal, the environment, the ocean. All that good stuff. And that's not me patting myself on the back for what I do, but I just think it's just so amazing how at least even discussions about science communication have been going up so much.
That's
so
good.
Yeah, I guess if anyone listening comes to the Monterey Bay Aquarium on a day that I'm working, I'd be happy to chat with you, especially you, Christy, as well.
Yes, I will. I will look out for you.
But yeah, that's just something to also just give a lot of context to why I love talking about these things so much as well. Because I also get to do it for a living, and I love it.
Yeah.
And for anyone listening who wants to get into either science communication, scuba diving, all that good stuff, I'd say the one of the hardest things to do, especially when I was young, was to ask people who do it like about it. And that's why we have podcasts like these. But also if you see somebody on Instagram or something, don't be afraid to reach out to them too.
Yes. Thank you so much for saying that. Cause I say it all the time on here, especially when we have guests on. I tell people, hopefully our listeners are listening to that. Cause I tell them, don't be afraid to ask. Cause I've met so many, you know, you and other people from Monterey on social media that I've gained relationships with from social media. And it's just developed into these other like friendships and, you know, these guests coming on to the podcast like you. And it's like all because you send a message or, you know, you follow someone and start developing that relationship through just chatting about what you like or just simply asking a question. So, yes, thank you for bringing that up, because I tell people all the time, just even if it's going out of your comfort zone, don't forget to ask. Like just ask it, because the worst thing somebody can say is no, or they don't respond to you.
Or they don't respond. Like
exactly.
They leave you on read. And then even then, just like maybe they're very busy. I don't know.
Yeah, you just never know. Like, always ask.
Always ask. And that will give you the resources to do what you want to do, or even tell you if you want to do that too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely good to get somebody else's point of view, because like you said, you might not want to do that when you get older. Mm-hmm. So you just never know. Yes. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It was a great episode. I loved chatting with you about all of your scuba diving adventures and, you know, giving advice to people that may want to be scuba divers or at least try it out and kind of dip their toe in the water about it, and talking about the aquarium too, because I think in the future, I'm definitely going to try to volunteer at the aquarium. We go all the time.
We would love to have you.
I hope so. And I just really appreciate you coming on and chatting about everything. And hopefully our listeners love this episode, and I'll love to have you back if in the future when we can get to like a specific topic that you guys are, I don't know, covering in the aquarium, and we can kind of chat about it, or, you know, some new stuff comes up. But yeah, thank you so much. It was great to have you on. I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Well, from going from just kind of being like Instagram friends, you know, for like years to being here right now, I think it's I just think it's really, really cool. And thank you so much for reaching out to me again,
Christy. Of course. Thank you.
It was an absolute pleasure. So anytime you want me to have you back.
Yes, I will. Thank you so much. All right, everyone. All right. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. This episode will be available as a video episode on our Patreon page. If you guys want to watch the whole thing, go ahead and check it out. Our link is in the bio. And I'll see you guys next week in the next episode. Bye, guys.